Portland, and about 2 minutes away from Rochelle Dixon and Voices from the Edge. She'll be taking your calls. That phone number is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, as Rochelle will be taking your calls to talk about issues in Portland today in about 1 minute or so on Voices from the Edge. At 9 o'clock, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell. 9:30, Fight the Empire with Per Fogering. At 10, The Heather McCoy Show. Heather welcomes Chrissy Stroop to talk about her article, The Gospel, According to Mike Pence. At 11, it's Book Waves. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, interviews and discussions of works by African American authors. This is KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Get up, good morning, all. This is Rochelle Dixon. I am your host for today for Voices from the Edge. I appreciate you joining me today. We have a lot to talk about, and today, you're going to be my guest. I would like you to call in with your thoughts on these things that are happening in Portland right now that are affecting our daily lives. So we're going to go through a few of them. And the number to call is 503-231-8187. Again, the number is 503-231-8187. And I want to hear your opinion on a few things. So let us dive right in. First of all, I want to say happy Black August. So that's right. There's another month that's specifically for African American history. This one is dedicated to the liberation of Black folks that have been denied justice in the penal system, and for freedom fighters. So happy Black August. And so we're going to just dive right in, and we're going to talk about some of the issues that have been on my mind. And since it's Black August, and I'm thinking about liberation a lot, I'd like to maybe start with 142 names. Yeah, 142. So I don't think I can read 142 today, right? So that's probably not going to happen. But I do want you to know that these folks are always on my mind, and they should be on your mind as well. So when I say 142 people, I'm talking about 142 people that were killed by Portland police in the last 27 years. By the way, I'm wearing my I Survived the Portland Police shirt by Donovan Smith, and I'm entitled to wear it because I actually did survive a car accident, an intentional car accident caused by the Portland police. So the 142 people that were killed by the Portland police in the last 27 years, so Nicholas Glendon Davis, who was 23 years old, Kelly Swoboda, 49 years old, Michael Gregory Johnson, 51 years old, Alan Lee Ballou, 29 years old, Christopher Ryan Healy, 36 years old. Does it surprise you that it's been 142 individuals killed by the Portland police? And I know that some of you might be thinking that, well, you know, the police do have to defend themselves in certain circumstances. That may be the case, but do you think it's 142 times? Do you think that's why federal judges came in and said Portland police had to reduce the amount of violence that they perpetrated on, especially on those that were mentally ill and people of color? What do you think about 142 individuals? So I'm going to read a couple more names. Stephen Wayne Leifel, 52. Quanice Derek Hayes, 17. Terrell Kyram Johnson, 24. Joshua Stephen Baker. Michael Anthony Tate. Is 142 an overwhelming number? There are countries that don't kill, haven't killed 142 ever. So it's very concerning to me that there's a list of 142. I think that's complete. This list actually comes from a woman, I'm going to thank, Maria Cahill, who is part of an organization that deals with parents and family members who have lost children to police violence. So 142 seems like an awful number to me. One of the reasons I've been thinking about this is because of Black August. I did not grow up with an understanding of what Black August was, so I'll tell you a little bit more about that. But it's partially connected to me. We've been talking about the separation of families, and especially at the border. And what's very concerning to me is I don't think people seem to see the correlation between the separation at the border of families and the separation by the justice system of families. And those 142 were not convicted of a crime. Okay, so those 142 never made it to a courtroom. These are the same concerns that we have about people who are coming to seek asylum and people who are coming for whatever reason to our border. They have not seen a judge, but they are being treated as criminals. I see a parallel between 142 people who were killed by Portland police, who never saw a judge, never got a chance to be convicted of anything, and were taken away from their families. Is there not a parallel there? Correct me if I'm wrong. The number is 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And in some of these cases, I just read the name of Quanice Hayes, and I know that Quanice, also known as Moose, was a suspect in a robbery. And I'm wondering if the penalty for a youth making a mistake of that sort, potentially making a mistake of that sort and being involved in a robbery, is the penalty death? If it is, I think we'd have a lot more than 142 bodies. I don't know how many of these bodies are people of color. This list is not sorted by that. This list is not sorted by how many of them are mentally ill or how many of them are disabled. I don't know that. But one thing I do know is that they were someone's child and that they were separated from their family. And the fact that they may have committed a crime, that they may have had reason to that the police may have had reason to get them in front of a judge concerns me, because that didn't happen. And it's the same thing that's happening at the border. I wonder, when is America going to see, the United States of America going to see that it keeps repeating injustices with slight changes? I once heard that history does not repeat, but it rhymes. So I'm seeing these folks at the border from Guatemala, from Mexico, from places in Latin America that want asylum, and the asylum that they're seeking often is at the hands of situations that have been created by the U.S. government. What do you think? Do you think that our playing into government systems in Latin America has anything to do with the folks that are at the border? Do you think our disproportionate systems and systemic injustice in terms of education for African Americans and education for lower class and working class folks for their children, do you think our system is inadequate to provide what we need as a society? Do you think that we need police reform? Do you know why we're not getting it? We have Deanna on the line. So, Deanna, you are on the line. What do you think?
Thank you very much for your words, Rochelle. And I thank you especially for bringing up that parallel that you mentioned, which I think I, as a person who consider myself somewhat informed on these topics, had not thought about it in that way. So I thank you very much for that. And I am referring to what you said, the parallel between what happens at the border when people are separated from their families and when people are thrown into the prison system. Well, headed to the prison system from the time they are born, practically, in the case of young people of color, because of the prison pipe, school to prison pipeline, which your listeners may be familiar with. Yes, there's very little talk about, first of all, what it does to a family to have a family member locked up. And the other thing that I wanted to mention is that the Portland Police Department, having killed that many people, has the great distinction of being a group of individuals who investigate themselves. That means there isn't anyone independent until that Department of Justice was called in because of an outrage, public outrage. No, they investigate themselves and they decide if they did the right thing, if they were justified in killing such and such a person. And I'm pretty sure most people may not know that Portland police are, if they draw their guns, and they are allowed to draw their guns anytime they are afraid, then they can shoot their guns, and they can shoot only to kill. They are not ever told, shoot to maim or disable a person so that they're not in danger. Shoot to kill. So I don't even know about this thing that happened apparently yesterday. Somebody thought to be breaking into a car.
Huh.
Had such a thing in their hand, according to witnesses, as perhaps an axe. That could have been anybody breaking into their own car if they were desperate enough, but it doesn't matter. The point is, because that person had something in his hand, the police shot and killed him.
Yes, I appreciate your thoughts, Deanna. Thank you so much for calling
okay.
in. I want to say that we've got to make some changes. And one of the things that folks have been very helpful about is we have a new police chief, Daniel Outlaw. And I think there is too much weight placed on one person for making these changes. These changes are systemic changes that need to be made. The systemic problems were in place a long time before Daniel Outlaw arrived. Daniel Outlaw does not have a magic wand. She cannot make up for the fact that Portland does not fund our social network, our network to help individuals who might be suffering from mental illness, to help youth who may be having challenges, who may not have good parental guidance. That is not the role of the police department. The role of the police department is to enforce the law. And when you call the police on a mentally ill person or a homeless person, and that's why they respond, 9 out of 10 times, the police don't go looking for people. They respond to your calls. That's very unfortunate when you find out that like 70% of the arrest of homeless were in fact generated by the neighbors of the homeless. Now, I say the neighbors of the homeless. Some people might be confused, but do you realize that all of those people, all of them, 100% of those people in those positions right now that are in the streets are your neighbors? Do you think of it that way? Do you think that you owe your neighbors anything? Do you think you owe them any respect? What do they owe you? What does the city owe you? I want to slide from that conversation, and we'll come back to some of it. If you give me a call at 503-231-8187. Today we're having a conversation, and I'd like you to be my guest. We're talking about things that are affecting our communities right now today. So I started with sharing with you that it is Black August. We are celebrating the liberation of Black people. It started in the penal system with prisoners. And now we're talking about the liberation of African Americans everywhere with Black August. So I started with talking about the border and how the separation of families is something that we're really concerned about. But I also want to share that the separation of African American families and Black families has been going on for a while, and Portland police have contributed to that. They've contributed to that with the 142 people that have been killed over the last 27 years. I don't know how many of those 147 were actually people of color or mentally ill, but I would suspect that it's a fair number. So I took some time to just read you off some of the names, and I'll continue to read you off some of the names. I won't get through 142 today, but I hope during the month of August that I'll have the opportunity to read all of those names. So now we're talking about neighbors. So the houseless are your neighbors, and we've got this change coming up in the civic code. Have you heard about that? Who's heard about that? Give me a call, 503-231-8187. So I just kind of skimmed the surface of the potential changes, but people really seem to be upset with what is happening with the potential change in the neighborhood association. And I am slightly confused, because I want to know, do you think the system is working for you? And do you think that system is working for your neighbors? Because if you do, I'm even more confused. I am so glad that Chloe and the Office of Civic Life is looking at making changes. Because let me tell you what I see in neighborhood associations. I see NIMBYism, not in my backyard. I see racism. I see ageist behaviors in conversations. I see neighborhood associations being dominated by folks that don't necessarily look like the entire community. And I think it would be wonderful if there was some opportunity to change that. Now, I'm not suggesting that the proposed changes are the path forward, but shouldn't we review our policies from time to time to make sure they address all of the happenings in our community? Do you think the neighborhood association does that for your community? I haven't seen that. I am going to call out a couple of the neighborhood associations that have been especially provocative in the information that they've put out. That includes Montevilla Neighborhood Association. Now, it looks like we have Lou on the line, so I'm going to take Lou's call. Hello, Lou. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
So, yes, I have been following the code change. We tried briefly raising it a bit with Cecil and Celeste Monday morning. I don't know if you were listening, but Sue Cree is a person at Portland State we've worked with the most. She manages the Civic Life Office. Chloe Udaly appointed her, and Sue and Chloe have been making several good changes towards equity and diversity and challenging the neighborhood associations that at one point may have done something, but seem gentrified, defending white power, defending the rich, basically. The two that we've come across, individuals that out of Portland State, that exemplify the problem with the neighborhood associations. Felicia Williams, who was chair of Downtown Neighborhood Association for 7 years, finally got voted out. She also ran for city council, a very conservative white candidate, someone I personally know and have been to 12 meetings with her. And also Eric Fruits, he was president of the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association for 5 years. He's a Portland State teacher in econ and pretty famous at this point on campus as the single most conservative right-wing libertarian teacher at PSU who has access to local mainstream media. He's also a consultant for Cascade Policy Institute, which is libertarian right-wing think tank. So what do you think about the code changes? I see that the Mercury had a really good article. Alex wrote it pretty comprehensive. And also contradictory, I guess. The Oregonians had a couple op-eds by neighborhood groups defending the old system. And in particular, I don't know if you've seen it, it's kind of what I wanted to ask you. Northwest Examiner is kind of a local Northwest paper, Alan Klassen. We're going to go talk to him today if we can find him in his office. He's the editor and the publisher. But he's had a campaign against Chloe and Sucre.
Everybody's got a campaign against Chloe.
Not true. Lots of us voted for Chloe, and lots of us support
Joanne Facebook,
and Chloe and Amanda. Yeah.
On Facebook, on this issue, I'm telling you, the tide is kind of against her from what I can read. And I ask folks, what is it about these new proposed rules that you don't like? And I got a bunch of nothing. I got a bunch of kind of misogyny, and I called it out. I said, hey, let's not be misogynistic. Let's just attack whatever it is that you don't like, because there's policies that I don't like, you know. Right. All day long, there's policies I don't like. However, I feel like no one in that list of Facebook folks I was having this conversation with, Chloe had made a post that they had examined the racism that was built into these policies and these codes, and the fact that they're ancient and don't apply to the current situation that we have now. Someone said, well, it's not going to change. Chloe said it's not going to change. What has Chloe been doing? I said, perhaps she's been reviewing the policies to make sure they're appropriate for how we live now, because these policies and the way this was structured, what has been 40 years? 40, how many years? 50 years. Okay, so I was thinking someplace around 47. So 50 years. Thanks for giving me that update.
Right. Well, I was at one point elected to the Downtown Neighborhood Association, so I followed some of the ins and outs. Chloe and Sucre have both been really helpful of providing information. Like, I thought the Alex's article in Mercury was good. I don't know if you got to see it yet.
No, I didn't. But I think that there's a lot of important issues that neighborhood associations don't deal with.
Sure,
I've been to meetings, and I've watched how meetings get monopolized by the people who have the mic. Now, you're a houseless person in that neighborhood, I consider you a member of that community.
Right.
You're not an outcast, but you're definitely not going to get the mic. You're probably going to be asked to leave.
Sure.
And so,
no, that actually happened with DNA in particular, which I've gone to probably 12 of their meetings, if not more.
And the anti-immigrant sentiment at Montevilla over there. What is going on over there?
Well, the example I was going to use, based on what you just said, is that there's a guy named Bobby who is African American and homeless or houseless, and he ran to be president of DNA, Downtown Neighborhood, against Felicia Williams, the conservative white person with the mic. And Grace Reed, who's a KBOO volunteer, disability organizer, she and I and some other people voted for Bobby, but Felicia kept the mic for several more years. I think the fundamental thing is there's a parallel. You mentioned one parallel at the start, but the parallel I see is national and local. To the extent that Trump and other right-wing, racist, sexist, misogynistic folks can distract and use division as a tactic, I think that's being replicated despite Portland's quote-unquote liberal reputation with at least some, not all, of the neighborhood associations. The Examiner is a really good example of the trajectory of the opposition, which is, sounds like kind of what you're asking. A year ago, Alan Klassen, the publisher, did a cartoon. I don't know if he drew it himself, but it was making fun of Chloe for being overweight. Well, so there was a starting point. Now, the current two arguments in this long five-page diatribe against Chloe and Sucre in the Examiner, the current issue. One point says that Chloe is too much like Trump, that she's not having enough process to include the privileged people.
Privileged people.
Well, they don't call them themselves that. They just say we're like neighborhood people who are whatever. The other argument almost, in fact, we sent in a thing to the Oregonian, which they haven't printed yet, an op-ed that was like 30 pages, or not 30 pages, but 30 paragraphs, to respond to what the Oregonian had, but they haven't printed it yet. And one of the arguments in that was that the opposition to the code changes, which is for equity and diversity, wants to argue that the problem in Portland is the district system, that city council is not elected by districts. Joanne's spoken up, and many others, that should be changed. City club even suggested that was a big problem. And in the Examiner, at least, they're conflating that and the first argument. That they were saying that by changing the code to include diversity and equity, that means it'll perpetuate the lack of accountability, when in fact, Suk and Chloe and lots of us who support the changes think that by changing it, that's one of the ways you'll get the districts by election by district legalized and accomplished, which would make things more democratic and accountable.
Well,
anyway, I should probably let you go.
Well,
Actually,
I would like for you to leave your contact information, because I'd like to hear more about this. You seem very knowledgeable. I appreciate you calling in today.
I
just want to say that it's very hard for people who have not been marginalized to understand that they've had a privilege. And when you ask them to give that privilege up, it seems like they're being harmed when they don't realize that they've been receiving a benefit that other people haven't received.
Right.
So thank you so much for calling in. Hopefully you can leave your information.
Well, I was going to tell you if you have 30 seconds.
Oh, sure.
Contact info is 503-222-2974. The group is Portland Gray Panthers. There's a meeting this Saturday where we're going to talk about privilege. It's at 4 p.m. at Portland State at Chit Chat Cafe. But there's voicemail at that phone number. But
okay.
The point I would make about privilege, since you asked about that, is that I think even Kirsten Gillibrand mentioned that in the debate this week, that people on the left, which KBOO is pretty much on the left compared to other media outlets, assume, I believe, that the middle, the vast majority of people in the United States, the Rust Belt voters in Michigan or rural Oregon, the Brian Boquist people, assume that they get the terminology. And I think there's a tendency for the term, like privilege, for example. I thought that was one of the things that Kirsten Gillibrand did good, is she kind of explained what that was for white folks. Don't see that as relevant to Make America Great, or just that people are responsible. And the Boulder problem that Joanne's been talking about with ODOT, the Boulder problem is seen in this context as a good solution rather than dealing with what you mentioned to start with, which that other people are neighbors, whether they're neighbors from El Salvador or neighbors from poor parts of the city.
Yep.
So anyway, thanks a lot. Bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lou. That was very informative. So we're back to 142 names. So these 142 names are folks that were killed by Portland police in the last 27 years. So we have Joshua Stephen Baker, Michael Anthony Tate, Billy Wayne Sims, Jonah Aaron Potter, Aldoberto Flores Harrow. Please give me a call at 503-231-8187. Do you see the parallel between people taken away from their families in our community by unjust laws, in this case, Portland police, and the parallel between individuals seeking asylum who have been taken away from their families by unjust laws, in this case, by ICE? I see that parallel, and I'm wondering why we didn't see it sooner to help the people at the border not have to experience it. Why aren't we recognizing that people in our community are suffering because they've been taken, removed from the lives of their children, their parents, their family, and the fabric of our community by Portland police? Today I'm wearing I Survived the Portland Police shirt by Donovan Smith, and I actually earned this shirt because I was in an accident with the Portland police. Actually, they hit me. So this has been going on for some time. What are we going to do about it? Does it not matter to you? Are we going to spend all our energy at the border? Are we going to spend some of it on working on our own communities? So back to this list here. Give me a call. Again, this is Voices from the Edge. I'm Rochelle Dixon, and we're talking about injustice in our community and things that are happening in our community that we need to address. A few more names here. Billy Wayne Sims, Michael Anthony Tate, Jonah Aaron Potter, Bradley Lee Morgan, Darius Eugene Johnson, William Kai Kyle Munro, Ralph Clyde Turner. These were people who were beloved by someone in this community in the last 27 years. So they're gone from our society. They didn't get a chance to see a judge. They didn't get a chance to speak about what their needs were, get that mental health treatment, or even serve the time if they actually committed a crime. We have the same, very much the same situation at the border where we have asylum seekers. It is not illegal to seek asylum. So we have folks that are seeking asylum that are being put in cages and put in jails. What do you think? Do you think that we have the ability to make changes? A lot of folks say they still want that law in place. They don't want open borders. I think that's the wrong term to use. I want some respect for the law, but I also want just laws. The number is 503-231-8187. So we were just talking about the civic code. We heard from Lou, who shared some information about why Sucre and Chloe Udaly are trying to make changes. Do you think that it's a power grab? That's what I've heard a lot of, and I didn't get that from what I've read. Now, truly, I didn't delve into it and spend hours examining it. But I'm curious about why it hasn't been changed in the last 50 years anyway, because it seems like our society is rapidly evolving, and what was appropriate 50 years ago is not appropriate today. The number is 503-231-8187. There was a lot of discussion about this online that I participated in, so I want to hear your thoughts on the civic code. Until we get the next caller, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I learned. I understand that we are going to have potentially another brawl in the street on August 17th. Oh, please let that not be true. So it looks like some folks might be coming down to Portland for round two of what they started last year. And Donald Trump has gone along with Ted Cruz and wants to declare an organization like Antifa a terrorist organization. What do you think of that? Give me a call at 503-231-8187. I'll say I'm also confused about that. I'm not an expert on Antifa. What I am an expert on is the KKK and other organizations, hate organizations that have existed for 100 years. I'm not sure why burning crosses on folks' lawn, lynching folks has not been declared domestic terrorism, but yet Antifa is going to be declared domestic terrorist because apparently Antifa and their allies handed out cashew and coconut cream milkshakes. I heard that it wasn't cement. So give me a call at 503-231-8187. What is your thoughts on that? Should we ignore the people brawling in the street? So it looks like Oliver is on the line from Portland. Oliver, you're on the line with me. Hello.
Hey, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you perfectly. How are you?
Okay, pretty good, pretty good.
Good.
I was, I'm kind of interested in the civic life dynamic. I have been following a little bit of that, and Commissioner Udaly has tried, and I say that like she's attempted, to do some clarification on social media, and it's just fallen flat. Now, I read the Oregonian today, and that exchange is just going to sink Commissioner Udaly. I know Marianne Schwab. I know her personally. I went to school with her son, Tom. I was also on the Belmont Area Business Association, and I was seated on the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. So I have a unique perspective of these neighborhood associations that feel like they're under attack from the bloated bureaucracy of City Hall. And I could even list a couple of examples, and just to be brief, if you'll give me a chance.
Go ahead.
I had an art studio called Blue Catfish Studios. It was an art collective, and that's how I got into being seated on these neighborhood associations there in the center of Portland. And some anonymous firefighters came to me, and I have a lot of respect for firefighters. I don't know how they knew that, but whatever it is, they came to me. And they said, listen, the city wants to shut down our historical fire station 9. And because and they do not want to spend the money on the seismic upgrade. Now, I'm going back to 2000, 2001. That's time's flying, right? And what it was is the city, the McMiniman brothers, actually wanted to buy a purchase and turn it into a bar, turn it into a pub. And the firefighters were under attack. There was bureaucracy in the fire department, and the city was bulldozing them. And they didn't want to spend the money on the seismic upgrade. So the only chance that the community had, and these anonymous firefighters, was the neighborhood associations to launch an appeal. And I ended up going down to City Hall and facing a whole bunch of old white establishment privilege at City Hall. Okay, so if we're going to use that argument and say that these neighborhood associations are just infested with white privilege, well, let's take a look at who's running City Hall.
Well, you know what, okay. Oliver? I would agree. I would say mm-hmm. that both need to be looked at. I would like more people of color to run for these offices. But let's not fool ourselves. 50 years of policies need to be reviewed from time to time. And I'm glad that you were able to work something out for that particular situation. Don't you think that the neighborhood association should advocate just as much for people who don't have a voice? So there are people in every neighborhood who are houseless that the neighborhood association doesn't advocate for. There are people who are immigrants that the neighborhood association doesn't advocate for. So I'm not sure that the neighborhood association looks like Portland. I believe that City Hall is beginning to look more and more like Portland.
Well, I'm encouraged. I mean, you know, I'm encouraged, but we're not there yet. And this is just it's the optics. See, the optics is we have these small little neighborhood associations. Now, they're very different. The Belmont area is going to look totally different than the East Portland or the Park Rose Neighborhood Association.
As it should. So, it should reflect the neighborhood that it's situated in.
We got to be cautious here, though. It's all I'm pointing out.
Now, we have to be cautious about expanding neighborhood associations to include more diverse voices.
I would agree with you on... No. We got to be cautious about painting this broad stroke that all of these neighborhood associations are these horrible places where democracy
Oh, I'm
dies.
Not trying to paint that picture. I'm not trying to say
that. Sounds like you're making broad statements that are just totally, you're not even dialed in. Now, listen, what's happening
wait
with
a minute.
Let's
back up 1 second. What made you think I wasn't dialed in?
Well, when I hear you making these generalizations and these broad statements against all neighborhood associations, it tells me you're pretty clueless about the neighborhood associations.
Now, well, actually, I'm not clueless about the neighborhood associations. I am very familiar with
the... Commissioner Daley is going about it the wrong way.
Oliver,
she's now attacking neighborhood leaders like Marianne Schwab.
I'm going to tell you that your assumption is incorrect. Just because
There's
I have a different
that are incorrect here.
Just because
That's
I have
point.
A different opinion, it doesn't mean that I don't know what goes on in neighborhood associations.
Okay.
I was just feeding back some of the unfortunate things from Montevilla, and there's some great things going on over in Lentz, but the neighborhood associations are outdated. They just are. It's 50 years old. It needs to be changed. Somebody needs to look at it. I can't say which direction it's going to go, but the next time you call this line, maybe ask me what I know about it before making that assumption. But Oliver, I appreciate you calling in today. Thank you so much, Oliver. I appreciate your opinion. You have a great day. Now, folks, so we're talking about the Office of Civic Life, the changes that are happening with the Neighborhood Association. It seems that people are very passionate about this subject, and I thought it'd been like 47 years since there's been a major update. Pretty close. It's been about 50 years. Do you think that we should be looking at changing the neighborhood association system to be more in keeping with how people live today? I think that's almost true with every policy, that we should be updating them and making sure that they're consistent with our values and that they're consistent with how we live today. So the Office of Civic Life and Chloe Udaly, Sukri, I hope I pronounced that right, have been making changes, and some people are pretty upset about it. And I just heard from a gentleman who said, I don't know much about the Office of Civic Life. Well, I'm certainly not an expert on that or the Neighborhood Association, but I do know one thing. The Neighborhood Association is the policies, the procedures are ancient. They're dominated by older folks, not so much the immigrants, folks of color that we've seen come into the communities in the last 5 decades. So are we going to keep policies and procedures that no longer serve us? Are we going to evaluate it? Are we going to have respectful dialogue so that we can come to something that's mutually respectful? Looks like we have Ross on the line. Ross, you're on the line with me. How are you?
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I so much appreciate your conversation today, and welcome to KBRU. I guess you're not personally new to KBRU.
No.
No. Anyway, I'm not new at all to neighborhood associations. This year I arrived in Portland in fall of 1973.
Okay.
Then in 1974 I moved to the Berry Hill, Corbett Twilliger neighborhood.
Okay.
And it's very interesting. That was the heyday of the beginning of organized neighborhood associations, and they'd been existing for a long time, but more independently before they became concerted by the Office of Neighborhood Associations. But so they had a very interesting structure that's completely different. They had representation by categories. So they had representation, and you elected these delegates each year, they had tenants were represented as a group, homeowners were represented as a group, business was represented as a group, and I think absentee landlords landlords.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a way in which the different categories were included, and at that time, there was a lot of speculation in that land down there, and so it was owned by a lot of speculators, and it was occupied by a lot of hippies looking for cheap housing. So that neighborhood became known for their hippies and so forth. But the hippies organized as tenants, and they downzoned that area from being zoned for high rise,
mm-hmm.
and to be have a limit of I think 3 stories. Anyway, I tell that because it was very different, and so the structure and the planning for how you organize these neighborhood associations very important, and they need to have some power. Well, you can't recruit people to join neighborhood associations when in fact they have so little power. They're sort of irrelevant, and. But I have been involved in neighborhood associations since I moved to Irvington community where I was involved, and then I've been down in the Boise neighborhood.
I'll be honest, I've never considered joining the neighborhood association to be a board member. I've considered the president.
Uh-huh,
I've considered, uh-huh. I've visited, and I've looked at what I saw and thought, oh my goodness. This is like a neighborhood country club.
they're neighborhood clubs. That's true. Because a lot of people like to join groups, and I like the people who come in, but I need to say there's no competition for them, and very seldom does anybody except maybe a real estate interest organize to join the membership or join the boards. And I've never attended... I have never attended any election over these last years where there is ever any contesting. In fact, the people who are going to join, going to become members of the board, one member says, I nominate you, and then that person says, I nominate you.
I think that's changing.
That's it.
I think that's one of the things that's changing. We just heard from a caller that said that a gentleman named Bobby challenged Felicia Williams to a position for Downtown Neighborhood Association.
And that could be true, sure.
Yeah, but I think in places like Montevilla and Lentz, we see that changing. But I also see it changing because I see gentrification happening in both of those neighborhoods. I see the houseless crisis showing up in those neighborhoods. So there's a dynamic that's at play with the neighborhood association that wasn't at play when they started. So there are different issues that folks are having to deal with. Some, many, that the neighborhood association, as you pointed out, has no power to even address. So I think it would be good to change the neighborhood association to give them some teeth on a few issues and then make sure that there is enough representation from
Absolutely.
The actual community, not
and
from the homeowners, because there are
exactly.
a lot of people who are renters. So it may need to be a situation where you may need to have the board, maybe 50% have to be renters. I don't know what the scenario is.
Get representation from those categories. The other thing is it wouldn't be wrong to ask for full disclosure by people, because really many of these associations are infiltrated, you might say, by very prominent property owners and speculators, and really it's we should ask for a disclosure. You know, if you're a property owner or you have interest in property,
good point,
it should be known.
Yeah,
and
that's a very good point. So thank you
I'll let you go.
Calling
you
in
much.
I appreciate it. So do we have another caller on the line here? Not yet. So we're going to go back to what the original discussion is. We're talking about things that are challenges in our city right now, challenges in our community. I was pointing out that it is Black August, which is the month designated by Black individuals to celebrate the liberation of Black folks and to commemorate the freedom fighters in the penal system. I am wearing my I Survived the Portland Police shirt today, and I was reading a list, a very sobering list, of 142 individuals that were killed by the Portland Police in the last 27 years. Not going to get through all that list today, but I want to take the time to read some additional names here. Have you ever considered the separation of these individuals from their family? I'm sure that some of these folks had children. At the very least, they had parents, they had siblings, potentially wives, but they're gone now. And we've got a crisis at the border where we're talking about folks being thrown into jail and not being given any kind of representation, no due process, and we're all up in arms about that. I wondered if you ever thought about these 142 people who didn't get a chance to go to a judge to seek justice. We don't know if they would have been convicted of a crime, but they're gone now. A lot of them were people of color. A lot of them may have been mentally ill. We can't ask any questions, but we can definitely, from them, but we can definitely hold our systems accountable. 142 people in the last 27 years. Thomas Higginbotham, Kevin Charles Moffitt, Marcus Lagazino, Daryl Dwayne Ferguson, Craig Bueller, Keaton Dupree Otis, Jack Dale Collins, Aaron Marcel Campbell, Osmar Lavena Bermudez, Derek J. Cody. Does the relationship between authoritarianism in our states have anything to do with what we're seeing at the border? Some people seem to think that this is new and that it's just popped up with Donald Trump. I'm not a fan of Donald Trump, but I'm going to push back on that. Donald Trump certainly didn't invent disenfranchising people of color. That's been going on for a very, very long time. These 142 people have been separated from their families. There's no chance of reunification. They've been separated forever. What are we doing in our community to help unify families and keep the Portland Police from being judge, jury, and executioner? Has that thought crossed your mind? Is there anything you want to say to me about it? Do you think I'm completely out of line for making that comparison? I see that we're marching in the streets for the children at the border, which I think we should be. I think we should be talking about it daily. But I don't see that same kind of conversation going around mass incarceration. The other thing I don't see it going around is war. 60 cents on our dollar. That's what we're spending on the war machine, 60 cents. And we've had debates. There was a Democratic debate, I don't know if you listened to it, the last 2 days, and they talked about paying for all these wonderful things that we want. We can't pay for those wonderful things because we have mass incarceration and we have a military-industrial complex that takes a lot of our money. Definitely think that we need a military force, in my opinion. But we've done some horrible things around the world with our military. Isn't it time that we brought our military home? Isn't it time that we support our veterans that are here? The number to call is 503-231-8187. So I'm going to bounce from that again back to this topic of civic life and neighborhood association. So the topic around what Chloe Udaly and Sukri have been doing to try and broaden the opportunity to participate in civic life through the neighborhood association. Do you feel like that's something that's going to disenfranchise the people who are already there? What do you think could be done to expand it without making some of the proposed changes? I see that people are opposed to any changes, and I've heard different things that maybe nothing is going to be changed at this point. But I also see the value in making it a place that's more diverse, that looks like the rest of Portland. What do you think? The number is 503-231-8187. Are the folks on the neighborhood association a little too privileged? Are they only the homeowners? Can we get some representation from the tenants? Are the renters? I heard the name of Felicia Williams mentioned as one of the privileged. I don't know much about her. I don't know that she ran for an office. I know that she's the seventh child in her family, so it doesn't sound like there was a heck of a lot of privilege going on there. But as a white woman, there's definitely some historical privilege. And she ran against someone who was houseless. And that person, of course, did not win, according to the gentleman that called in, Lou. Should there be representation from the houseless? How should that be handled? Maybe an individual could be appointed, or maybe there could just be a committee that looks at things that come from all of the neighborhood associations. Do you think that there should be representation? I'm going to go with yes on that, because the houseless are members of our community. Give me a call with your thoughts at 503-231-8187. We have just a few minutes left in this show. I appreciate all of your thoughts and you're calling in. I just want to say that I appreciate especially folks being respectful when they call in, because that's one of the things I've noticed. This conversation is getting heated over neighborhood associations. And I think, geez, we're better than that. With all the challenges that we have, this is like something that should be one of our easier tasks, because we're going to open it up, or at least that's the proposed changes. What about it is causing people to be afraid of the changes? What about it is causing people to call it a power grab? Frankly, I don't see it that way. I haven't spent a lot of time at the meetings. Correct me if I'm wrong, respectfully. And the number is to call is 503-231-8187. I would love if I could hear from one of the folks on the neighborhood associations. Maybe a president could call in and maybe share some information about how they think it might impact the changes going forward. For the most part, I don't think the average homeowner or tenant or houseless person would be aware of the goings-on in the neighborhood through the neighborhood association if some of them hadn't been so combatant against the houseless population. I think for the most part, people don't think about it. They think, yeah, it's there. they don't do much. They don't have a lot of power. And then we have conversations about Montevilla. We have conversation with what's going on in Lent. Statements get issued about immigrants and whether they're welcome or not, and who is putting out those statements, and does that color individuals' opinion of the neighborhood association? Am I painting them all with the same color brush? Is it untrue? Are there a lot of young people showing up? In Lent, it's true, right? So a lot of young people are showing up for the Lent Neighborhood Association meetings. They've got their whole Lent Young People, I don't remember what it's called, but it's a young people collective. And I think it's a great thing that they're getting involved now. That is not true for most neighborhood associations. I know that the Laurelhurst Neighborhood Association has a very, very racist history in the past. You can go back and see neighborhood clippings about some of the things that have been done in the name of preserving Laurelhurst neighborhood. My mom lived in Laurelhurst for the last part of her life, and it was interesting to go into that neighborhood and feel, as I walked through the neighborhood and drove through the neighborhood, feel some of the impact of the fact that African Americans weren't allowed there. And there were beatings of African Americans at the behest of people who were in the neighborhood association. Now, that's been a while, but the memory of that still lingers on for me. I don't have to go to Laurelhurst very much. And I'm kind of glad about that, because for me, that place holds some trauma for me. And I'm sure that there are other places that hold trauma for other folks through the Neighborhood Association. We have a caller on the line. It's Linda. So, Linda, you're on the line. What do you want to talk about, Linda?
Hi. Well, you're talking about the Neighborhood Association, so I just wanted to weigh in on that a little bit. I've never been a member of one, but I was a homeowner, and there was a neighborhood association. And I felt like it generally kept us updated on issues that might relate to us from the city and from the area around. And people wrote kind of little, different members of the community wrote little articles. Some of them were like little stories, sort of like a little newspaper in the newsletter that would come out. And I never found it offensive in any way. What I do believe is that this is a power grab, and that it won't be good for us, because the intention to allow weird infill in all neighborhoods, I oppose. I'm a renter. I pay way too much rent. So it's not that I own one of these houses and don't want someone moving in next to me. It's that I love our old neighborhoods, and I think tearing them down is not giving us any new housing. We've got 18,000 open, units. I think we should be doing something about that. We should be turning our eyes not on the homeowners and the neighborhood associations in Portland, but about the developers and the way that they're using our community to make money off of these securitized units that they're putting up in huge numbers. Mm-hmm. They're much more a problem. Let's say they have to fill those with homeless people. Let's get really radical and say, since they can't fill those with regular people, we are going to, find them until they can fill them with, until they can. Let's think of something that would actually solve housing. All this will do is be contentious, and it will consolidate power. The one thing about the neighborhood association is anybody can have access to them in the neighborhood.
Oh, Linda, that's not true.
I mean, officially, anybody can.
But, Linda, I do want to clarify something. People who are houseless are regular people. They're still your neighbors. And so I know that was probably just a slip. I've done that myself.
I wasn't referring to them as regular people. I was referring to the neighborhood associations, that any regular person, and I meant by that all of us, I mean the houseless people too, but I haven't ever heard of that happening. But I think what I'm saying is I think the people should try to make use of these structures rather than having one centralized structure.
I hear what you're saying. The problem is that hasn't happened. There's been a large percentage of the community that's been excluded, people of color, immigrants, and the houseless.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for calling in, Linda. I have another call I'm going to take.
I about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Claire, you're on the line.
Hi.
How are you, Claire?
Oh, I'm good. How are you?
Sure. You want to make a comment?
Yeah. I think it's really cool that we're having this conversation. I'm a student in urban planning, and I think it's really exciting that we're maybe seeing changes with neighborhood associations. Just, you know, not to say that they're all the same, but the history of the neighborhood associations is a fairly, racist history. They essentially were formed to exclude people of color after it became unconstitutional for the government to do so from certain neighborhoods. And I think that the idea of, you know, allowing people to organize in their neighborhoods and advocate for their needs is obviously really important. And so there's potential in the idea of a neighborhood association. But I think with new changes, we could acknowledge that history and change them and move forward in a way that allows people of all different kinds, houseless people, people of color, renters.
Claire, I'm going to have to cut you off. We just got about a minute and a half left, but I appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much, Claire.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take this one last caller. Crystal, you're on the line. You have 30 seconds. What do you want to say me, Crystal?
Well, that last call was very inspiring. Next generation, we got to resolve this. But I like having the access. I like seeing the Southeast Examiner and Northwest Examiner print up the summaries, and I always go to the meetings wherever I live, which is a lot of different places, even when I'm homeless and even when I'm living under a slumlord and I speak out about it. And one time my neighborhood association was talking about building a beautiful cob bench and garden in this unused land, and they wanted to, and then they said, don't let the homeless people sleep there. And
Crystal, thank you so much. You've had the last word. We're ending the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. This is Rochelle Dixon, and you've been listening to Voices from the Edge. Teresa Mitchell will be up at 9 a.m. with Press Watch. Thank you so much.
And this is KBOO Portland. It is 9 o'clock, and coming up is Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, her weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire with Per Fogarang. And then Heather McCoy and the Heather McCoy Show will be coming on our way here in, at 10 o'clock. She'll be welcoming Chrissy Stroop to talk about the article, The Gospel According to Mike Pence. At 11 o'clock, it's Book Waves, and then at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, interviews and discussions of works by African-American authors.
Did you know that KBOO podcasts all our news and talk shows?
You can find the podcast on KBOO's website, kboo.fm, on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Just search for your favorite show and hit subscribe to get all the latest episodes downloaded to your favorite device.
Or search for KBOO on iTunes, Google Play to get all the KBOO podcasts.
This is Press Watch.